Hello, and welcome to Diabetes Health, brought to you by OWL Radio, a community service of the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Madeline Nally, and for the next half hour, I will be reading articles from the Diabetes Health magazine. Nadia Al-Samari was not only born into a family with diabetes, but also married into one. She was propelled at a young age into caretaker mode, and with her knowledge of the scarcity of resources, support, and understanding for people with diabetes, co-founded Diabetes Interview, now Diabetes Health Magazine. Nadia's leadership has spanned 29 years, establishing the magazine as a preeminent consumer and professional resource. Under her reign, Diabetes Health Magazine was named one of the top 10 magazines to follow in the world for 2018 by FeedSpot Blog Reader. People, drugs, and technology. We've said this before in other columns, but it bears repeating. The world of diabetes is a fascinating blend of patients and their emotions, drugs, and technology. The technological marvel that most people with diabetes are aware of is CGM, continuous glucose monitoring. The ability to continuously track blood sugar levels throughout the day makes CGM a godsend for both type 1s and type 2s. In Living the Continuous Glucose Monitor Life, page 6, Clay Wirestone looks at the future of continuous glucose monitors, both in their capabilities and durability, and the evolution of their status from very expensive devices to lower-cost technology that could soon be available on a mass-market basis. Clay continues his in-depth reports on diabetes in 9 Things to Know About Insulin, page 9, short bullet point observations about what some say ranks alongside penicillin as the greatest drug discovery in history. Diabetes patients experience many ups and downs with their emotions. Our type 1 correspondent Megan Essler offers a touching vignette about the support and encouragement two women at work give her in My Own Little Cheering Volunteering Committee, page 12. A less consoling observation about the emotional states of people with diabetes is how depression affects your diabetes self-management, page 22. There is an increasing awareness that along with controlling their blood glucose numbers, diabetics often must deal with depression from the constraints and demands posed by their disease. But back to a sunnier side, Diabetes Camp Life, page 14, reports on one of the best tonics there is for diabetic children, a week or two at a summer camp designed especially for them. Such camps offer safe places for kids to play without worrying about insults or censure from other non-diabetic kids, and to experiment with dosing and controlling their diabetes on their own, under good but hands-off supervision. At the opposite side on the age scale is Emil Backofen, an 86-year-old man who regularly plays tennis, both because he can and because it helps him control his blood sugars. In Tennis Helps Type 2 to Control His Blood Sugars, page 16. In Ask Nadia, page 18, a reader wants to know what to do about a mother whose blood glucose level is 434. That's an astoundingly high number to people who have their blood glucose levels under relative control, but not as uncommon as you may think. Spring is here, a good time to smell the roses and enjoy the greening of the land. Nadia Al-Samari, founder, publisher, and editor-in-chief. Cover story. Living the Continuous Glucose Monitor Life. Challenges, opportunities, and the future. Clay Wirestone. Over less than two decades, continuous glucose monitor technology has revolutionized care for type 1 diabetics. For long-term diabetics, the concept still carries a whiff of wizardry. A transmitter attached to the body sends information about blood glucose levels to a receiver throughout the day. Healthcare professionals and people with diabetes are only beginning to explore the potential of CGMs. To move to the future, though, we have to understand where we've been and where we are now with the technology. Facing down the challenges. Regardless of the glossy brochures provided by manufacturers, continuous glucose monitoring systems aren't perfect. Let's repeat that one more time for emphasis. Continuous glucose monitoring systems aren't perfect. Why not? The simplest answer is that they don't actually test blood glucose levels. Blood sugar is a precise thing, and you can figure it out by looking at the name. It's a measure of glucose contained in the blood circulating through your body. A blood glucose meter does that measurement, and current technology allows it to do so with a fair amount of precision. A CGM, on the other hand, tracks glucose using your body's interstitial fluid, the stuff that fills space around cells. In general, it tracks blood glucose levels, but it can lag behind. It can also be a relative measurement, which means it usually requires some kind of calibration. Although Dexcom's latest models have been approved for making treatment decisions without a finger stick, other models haven't quite gotten there yet, and it's a brave person with diabetes indeed who would inject or infuse a sizable correction based solely on a CGM reading. Those who have dealt with the disease for decades know that the multiple measurements are the surest way to be certain. Secondly, the technology is expensive. You can go to a drugstore and buy a meter and test strips for $20 to $30. A continuous glucose monitoring system will set you back more than $1,000 depending on the model and needed supplies. Insurance can cut that cost, true, but coverage varies. Again, companies are working on that challenge too. The Freestyle Libre, for example, offers a CGM-like experience for a far cheaper price. One imagine other options will follow. Embracing the opportunities. Depending on how a person with diabetes chooses to use it, a continuous glucose monitor holds exceptional promise. Think of it this way. For decades, diabetes educators and endocrinologists had to guess what a patient's blood sugar levels were doing overnight. They had to use sparse data points to even figure out what those levels were doing during the day. Now all the professional has to do is download data from the last few weeks or months. They can look over graphs with the patient, pointing at spikes and dips, attempting to figure out precisely what's going on and when. There are daily benefits too for people with diabetes. The ability to run to the grocery store, take a trip around town, or go for a jog without carting around blood sugar testing equipment is a godsend. Yes, you might have to bring a receiver, but it's going to be smaller and easier to handle than a monitor, lancing device, and bottle of test strips. There's a social benefit too. Those with diabetes can sometimes feel frustrated when trying to communicate about the disease to friends and loved ones. The ability to show these well-meaning individuals direct evidence of blood sugar trends makes a difference. See, the diabetic can say, I've been up and down all day, that's why I'm irritated. Or, see how I'm heading down right now? That's why I need some sugar right this instant. That hypoglycemic example highlights one of the most practical and immediate benefits of the CGM for everyday treatment: the virtual elimination of low blood sugars. Since tight control and multiple injections became the norm in the late 1980s, diabetics have grappled regularly with unpredictable lows. The CGM, by showing not only lows but declines as they're happening, make hypoglycemia far simpler to handle. If you see a downward trend with a blood sugar of 180 and 9 units of insulin still on board, you can take advanced action by eating a few quick-acting carbs. A simple finger stick check wouldn't have given you anywhere near that amount of information. Looking to the future. If past experience with diabetes technology has shown us anything, it's that technology only improves over time. Insulin pumps, for instance, were once bulky and difficult to use. The principles behind them weren't difficult to understand, but most diabetics stayed away. These days, with improved form factors and interfaces, insulin pumps are widespread. Likewise, CGMs are only going to get better and more accurate. They will require less frequent calibration or no calibration at all, as the case may be. They will predict trends further in advance. They will integrate more tightly with pump technology, and they will continue to shrink in size and improve convenience. Ultimately, it's likely that CGM technology will become integrated with pumps. Multiple established and startup companies are working on closed-loop systems that include both pump and glucose monitoring components. It seems incomplete, even now, to talk about one without the other. In diabetes equipment, as much of technology these days, users can expect more features in a more compact package each and every year. Feature. Do you take insulin? 9 things to know about insulin: the good, the bad, and the expensive. Insulin matters. For diabetics and the people who love them, no medication matters as much as insulin. It's literally the difference between life and death for type 1 diabetics, and a substantial number of type 2 diabetics depend on it too. But how much do you actually know about insulin? How much do you know about that clear, distinctive smelling hormone that you inject or infuse into your body? Here's a list of 10 important things to understand about insulin. Number 1. A lot of people use it. In the United States, about 6 million people use insulin. That's more than the population of Los Angeles. That's more than the population of Chicago. In fact, that's more than the population of any U.S. city with the exception of New York. Think of the number of vials, pens, and needles. Think of the amount of insulin pump paraphernalia. Think of the millions of pokes, pricks, injections, and insertions. In other words, insulin is everywhere. Number 2. There are a multitude of ways to get it in your body. The iconic clear glass vial of insulin and a sharp new needle aren't the only ways diabetics get the medicine they need. These days, they can also use insulin pens, which come pre-filled. They can use the infusion set of an insulin pump, or, if they're feeling especially daring, they can try Afrezza, a type of inhaled insulin. Number 3. It was invented in Canada. A team of researchers at the University of Toronto discovered insulin in 1921. The work won a Nobel Prize and is now commemorated on the Canadian $100 bill. Although accounts of the discovery have been disputed over the years, according to a November 2018 Medical News Today article, the most accurate credit is as follows. Frederick G. Banting came up with a way to extract pancreatic extract in 1921. John McLeod, the head of physiology at the University of Toronto, oversaw this process. Charles Best, Banting's assistant, helped to refine the process, and a biochemist named James Caliph helped to purify insulin even further to make it clinically useful. Number 4. The original patent was sold for $1. Banting sold the patent of insulin to the same University of Toronto for $1. The university then licensed it to pharmaceutical companies royalty-free. Bantam and the university's thinking was simple. If drug companies held the patent, they would drive up the prices. Likewise, if they had to pay exorbitant royalty fees, companies might charge too much. The creators of the drug wanted it available as widely and as cheaply as possible. That was a noble goal. Even a Nobel one. Unfortunately, it also hasn't worked out in practice. More about that below. Number 5. When Humulin was introduced in 1983, it was a big advance. The first insulin given to diabetics was produced from animal sources, usually cattle and hogs. Some patients were allergic to the mixture and struggled to control their blood sugar levels. It wasn't until 1982 that Eli Lilly introduced Humulin, which was genetically engineered. Humulin was the first of the human insulins, meaning that they are more precisely mirrored the hormone released by non-diabetics. Number 6. Only 3 companies control the insulin market. Despite the demand for the stuff, more than 90% of the world's insulin comes from 3 main manufacturers. They would be Novo Nordisk, which makes Novolog, Eli Lilly, which makes Humalog, and Sanoventis, which makes Lantus. Each of the companies produces their own versions as well, but those are the 3 most recognizable. Number 7. There's a national conversation going on about price. If you're uninsured or on a high-deductible health plan, you may have noticed that insulin's list price is incredibly high. A single vial costs around $300. According to the American Diabetes Association, the average price of insulin nearly tripled between 2002 and 2013. Lawmakers have been examining the issue, and insulin manufacturers have also rolled out programs meant to help diabetics pay for the insulin. Number 8. Brew your own? Efforts are underway to do just that. As Diabetics Health reported in its annual product guide this year, there's currently an open source insulin effort underway meant to democratize who can manufacture the drug. While you might not be able to brew some up in your bathtub, those working on the project envision a future in which local hospitals or universities could produce local, lower-cost supplies. Number 9. There's no shame in taking it. Type 1 diabetics know this already, but it bears emphasizing for the type 2s out there. You shouldn't be afraid of taking insulin. As a matter of fact, it can radically improve your control of diabetes. Yes, an injectable drug can seem scary and uncomfortable, but insulin is necessary for life, and non-diabetics produce their own. So grit your teeth, face your fears, and inject. Your body will thank you. Living well with type 1 and type 2. My Own Little Cheering Volunteering Committee by Megan Essler. Less than a week before International Women's Day, I sat at my office desk trying to finish some work. At some tables across the room, 2 of my most dedicated volunteers and good friends discussed Social Security benefits and retirement. One mentioned that she would try to wait until age 70 to take her Social Security benefits. The other had already started. They discussed aging and hoping for a good long life expectancy and then turned the conversation to me. How about you, Megan? One asked. When do you think you'll retire and take your Social Security benefits? I thought for a moment. I'm only 41 now, but I have type 1 diabetes for more than half my life. I also have celiac disease and thyroid issues. I quietly said, I don't know. I really don't know how long I'll live with all that is wrong with me. I don't think I'll get to be really old. Instantly, they sprang into protective mode. One sweet volunteer pulled out her phone, tapped away wildly, and exclaimed loudly, Hey, Mary Tyler Moore, who also lived with type 1 diabetes, lived to be 80. She passed away from causes that could have happened to anyone, not from her diabetes. You could easily have more than 40 years left. The other volunteer chimed in and pointed out that when people live with chronic illness, they usually take far better care of themselves than the rest of the population does, adding that it could mean a much longer life. I felt so overwhelmed by their sweet pep talk and caring. Here I just assumed my life would be a shorter one because of my autoimmune illnesses. They have a beautiful point. Perhaps all my hard work, my daily exercise, carb-conscious food choices, and frequent blood sugar testing could lead to a great long life. I couldn't be more thankful to these two amazing people in my life. They do exactly what women should do for one another. They build you up when you are down. I strive to always be there to support these two during their hardships and worries too. They make my life better each and every week, and I feel blessed to work with them. Who knows? With any luck, when I do retire, I can volunteer alongside these two incredible, inspiring people. Megan Esler is one of our longest Type 1 contributors. Her articles are flavored by many of her real-life stories that captivate us because of her courageous writing style, where she shares all. You can also follow her on her low-carb, gluten-free blog on totemptation.com. That's totemptation.com. Diabetes Camp Life: Why a Special Summer Program Could Be Just the Ticket, by Clay Wirestone. Summer will arrive before long, and parents of children with diabetes might wonder how to fill the long, active days while staying safe. So many children love to run around outside unsupervised, but that can carry risk for those looking after their blood sugar. Enter the Diabetes Camp. The concept, for those familiar, is simple. Bring together diabetic kids of different ages and backgrounds in a supportive, nurturing environment packed with experienced staffers and medical professionals. Children have the most opportunity to meet peers who deal with the same challenges that they do, and parents can breathe a sigh of relief because of the extensive trained supervision. How do I find one? The internet serves a great resource for would-be campers. Both the Diabetes Education and Camp Association, found at diabetescamps.org, and the American Diabetes Association at http://www.diabetes.org/inmycommunity/diabetescamp/. Offer lengthy lists of programs. Make sure to read up on the various camp programs that might be available to you. Your child's safety and your own peace of mind are critical factors, so make sure you're comfortable with the options. Don't be afraid to make some phone calls to find out more. Is there a charge? Camps are usually committed to making sure the experience is affordable for families. According to the ADA, through the association's year-round fundraising efforts and generous donors, we only charge families 50% of the true cost to provide camp for a child. In addition, camperships are available to help families pay the camp. The amount of assistance awarded is based on financial need. We use a sliding scale to determine if you qualify for partial or full campership. In other words, don't let any concern about cost dissuade you. The resources are there to make sure your child has an experience that he or she won't soon forget. What can my child expect? To have fun. More specifically, diabetes camps include many of the expected activities of summer camps, such as making friends, enjoying campfires, and experiencing nature. But diabetes camps pack in a few bonus activities too. For one thing, they allow young campers to gain confidence and independence many of those attending won't have had. The experience of managing their diabetes on their own and feeling secure in their decisions. The trained staff help instill that confidence. For another, they offer abundant opportunities for education. The staffers and medical professionals on hand have a wealth of knowledge, tips, and tricks to share. The experience of camp gives abundant natural moments for that education to take place. The long haul. As the parent of a child with diabetes, you know, the road is long. Your child will likely be dealing with diabetes for a long time, until the day a cure arrives, at the very least. Dealing with the disease can sometimes feel like a punishment. Not that your child did anything wrong, but the limitations and restrictions can pile up. As a parent, you're also constantly concerned, worrying about blood glucose levels, basal rates, and carbohydrate counts. Summer camps allow both of you, child and parent, to step back from that long slog, if only for a short time. They allow your child to see that he or she isn't alone. They allow you a bit of a breather, and the education and confidence gained by your child could well transform his or her life, not a bad result. So this summer, trying looking into a camp. Ask your child's healthcare professionals what they think. Ask your child, and make it a vacation to remember. Living well with type 1 and type 2. Tennis helps type 2 to control his blood sugars. Emil Bakofen didn't have any relatives with type 2 diabetes, so he wasn't keenly aware of it. When he was traveling in Europe 29 years ago, he felt very thirsty and didn't know why. He went from fast food place to fast food place getting some extra large cold drinks, and they still weren't satisfying his thirst. It was during a hospitalization on that trip to Europe that the doctors ran some blood tests, discovering that his blood sugar level was 700. Emil was shocked, but at least he had an explanation for his symptoms. The physician started him on an oral medication, insulin, but after his hospitalization, he was able to stop the insulin. He was 57 then. Now 86, Emil says that he manages his type 2 diabetes by taking his medicine, which includes oral medications and injecting Victoza once a day, by watching what he eats, and by doing a good amount of exercise each day. Quote, I play tennis 3 out of the 4 months of the year. I don't play during the cold winter months. It's much nicer to play when the weather is warm and balmy. He adds, quote, when not playing tennis, I walk a lot. I'm known as the walker in the neighborhood. These days, my A1C is under 7, so that pleases my doctors and me. It's been consistently good, so I know I'm doing things right each day. Emil, a widower who is the father of 4 children, 8 grandchildren, and 2 great-grandchildren, divides his time between Long Island, Florida. He enjoys spending time visiting with his family and friends, and he also likes to watch TV, read some good books, and follow the stock market. Whether it's on the cable business news channels or in the newspapers, I tune into the stock market every day, Emil notes. Quote, it's been a long-time interest of mine. A 30-year-old employee of Xerox Corp., Emil started working for them as a messenger. Quote, I worked my way up to being a production manager. Now that I'm retired, I get to spend my time as I please. When you've got a sport or a hobby that keeps you active, exercising isn't a chore at all, Emil says. Quote, it's fun and it's a good way to stay healthy. Ask Nadia, how to bring down a 434 blood sugar, ? Nadia Al-Samar. Dear Nadia, my mother's blood sugar level is 434. What kind of fruits and food is she supposed to be eating? JN. Dear JN, I am happy to read that your mother has an advocate such as yourself. You did not mention if she has been diagnosed with type 1 or type 2 diabetes. My first recommendation is to reach out to your mother's healthcare professional to discuss her high blood sugar. Many variables can be the cause of high blood sugar. Diet is undoubtedly the most common, but sometimes specific medications like anti-inflammatories can also raise your blood sugar as a side effect. Getting sick or feeling stressed can also impact blood sugar levels. You did not mention if your mother is on an oral type 2 medication or if she is taking insulin. Depending on how long she has been on her medication, healthcare professionals tend to adjust medications accordingly. Balancing the perfect dose from your healthcare professional can start out as a trial and error, requiring fine-tuning. Depending on your mother's circumstance, it could be that she is in a trial and error process with her healthcare professional who is looking for the perfect dose to balance her blood sugars. A big kudos to your mother for testing her blood sugars. How else would she know how effective her medication is? Unless she has feedback. I admire that she is not keeping her head in the sand and guessing her blood sugars. I manage my type 2 mother's insulin, thyroid and depression medication. It was apparent to me when my mother needed to go back in to meet with her healthcare professional for blood work to see if her medication required to be increased or if it was time to start a different medication. Her depression and thyroid medication made a big difference in her will and motivation in managing her diabetes. I would like to offer these general evergreen tips from Sue Tom. Check in with her healthcare professional before changing your mother's therapy. Sue Tom, a certified diabetes educator, offers these tips. 1. Eating less food at the next meal, eliminating a snack and/or eating foods with a lower glycemic index. 2. Increasing activity or incorporating more exercise. 3. Changing medications and/or administering them more frequently. 4. Relaxation techniques and behavioral management. 5. Treating identified illness and or infections. 6. Monitoring on a more frequent basis and or monitoring other parameters. 7. Increasing consumption of sugar-free fluids. Disclaimer. Nadia's feedback on your question is in no way intended to initiate or replace your healthcare professional's therapy or advice. Please check in with your medical team to discuss your diabetes management concerns. Ask Nadia at diabeteshealth.com. and receive her unique perspective on your question. About Nadia. Ask Nadia, ranked number 1 by Google, named Best Diabetes Blog for 2019 and 2017 by Healthline, and with 24 nominations, Nadia Al-Samari's efforts have made her stand out as a pioneer and leading patient advocate in the diabetes community. Nadia was not only born into a family with diabetes, but also married into one. She was propelled at a young age into caretaker mode, and with her knowledge of the scarcity of resources, support, and understanding for people with diabetes, co-founded Diabetes Interview and now Diabetes Health Magazine. Nadia has been featured on ABC, NBC, CBS, and other major cable networks. Her publications, medical supply business, and website have been cited, recognized, and published in the San Francisco Chronicle, the Wall Street Journal, Ann Landers advice column, former Chrysler chairman Lee Lacoa, Entrepreneur Magazine, Houston News, Philly.com, Brand Week, Drug Topics, and many other media outlets. Thank you for listening to Diabetes Health. This program will be replayed this evening starting at 9 p.m. If you have questions or comments, please call us at 210-829-4223. This is Madeline Nally saying goodbye from Owl Radio.